to the book of Jeremiah, 39th chapter. I'm not going to read every verse in this chapter. There's a reason why. Some of the names are so very hard to pronounce, I just don't want to be guilty of massacring those things in the English language, number one. But also, I do want to get through the book of Jeremiah. There's some other studies that I want to get into. Look at 39th chapter here. I'm going to read verse 1 and 2 to start with. In the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the tenth month came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. Now, this is the last time. There were three different times Nebuchadnezzar did this. This is the very last time he's coming down now and lay siege here to Jerusalem. And the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the fourth month, the ninth day of the month, the city was broken up. He took the city after an 18-month siege. It's how long he was out there, around the ramparts out there, trying to take Jerusalem. Of course, any time you've got in the old times where you had these sieges that were laid to the cities, the armies that were out there were kept there so long, the longer they were there, the madder they got. So once they did get into these cities, they just took out their vengeance. If any of you have been in a military group, and you guys know what I'm talking about, it's sit and wait, sit and wait, sit and wait. They move you into position to do an operation, and then you sit there for weeks and weeks and weeks. And by the end of those weeks that you're sitting there, you're ready to go fight a guerrilla. You don't care. You're just ready to go do something. I mean, you've had it. That's what you're trained for. I was with the Special Forces in the Cuban operation, and they put us in an isolation area there to go into Cuba, and we sat there for weeks, nowhere, out in the open. They wouldn't let us congregate with anybody else, had special missions. And by the end of that, I was ready to go fight some town guys, anybody that you could get a hold of. It does something to your psyche, okay? And this is the way these soldiers were outside of Jerusalem. Look at verse 4. It says here, the princes of Babylon, verse 3, of Babylon came. They sat in the middle gate. They've taken Jerusalem. And they, all of the leaders of Nebuchadnezzar's army now are sitting in the central part of Jerusalem. Verse 4. It came to pass when Zedekiah, the king of Judah, saw them and all the men of war, then they fled and went out of the city by night, by the way of the king's garden, by the gate betwixt the two walls, and he went out the way of the plain. Now, Zedekiah, the Jerusalem has been breached, the walls, all of the leaders of the Babylonian army are in there congregating in the middle courtyard, directing the cleanup operations. Zedekiah now knows this. It's happened. It's too late. So he gets his entourage and his group together, and they take off out through a secret passage to get out before they're captured. Verse 5. But the Chaldeans' army pursued after them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had taken him, they brought him up to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon them. Now, he had set up his headquarters there at in another town, not Jerusalem, there, and at Riblah, really, is where he set up his headquarters for this occupation and campaign. Then the king of Babylon slew the son of Zedekiah. Now, remember, this man, this king, made the decision against what Jeremiah had told him. He could have saved his family, could have saved himself. He could have saved thousands and thousands and thousands of people in Jerusalem by one decision that he made. He had the decision to make, and Jeremiah told him, surrender to Nebuchadnezzar, and none of this will happen. And he said, no, he's going to go ahead and do it his way. Well, by his decision, he cost many thousand people their lives. He's going to cost himself dearly here, and I'll show you what it is in just a minute. The king of Babylon slew his sons. That's the first thing Nebuchadnezzar does. He takes his sons, and in front of his face, remember Jeremiah told him, he said, you will meet the king of Babylon eye to eye, face to face, just as we're meeting right now. And this is what Nebuchadnezzar did. Some of the historical accounts of this, Nebuchadnezzar brought him up, And because he had rebelled and continued to rebel, and Nebuchadnezzar knew what Jeremiah had been telling him. Jeremiah was well known in the courts of Babylon. You'll see this in just a few minutes. But Nebuchadnezzar knew this and had been telling him. And Zedekiah decided he's going to go his own route. No, he wasn't going to surrender against what God said. So he's paying the consequences now. So when Nebuchadnezzar got a hold of him, he kills his sons right there while he's watching here. Before his eyes, also the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Those that had escaped with him, his entourage, that were trying to get out of the city, thought they were going to escape and get away. Nebuchadnezzar has them all killed right there in front of Zedekiah while he's there watching. Verse 7. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes. And this is the last thing Nebuchadnezzar told him. He said, because of the way you have done and you have rebelled, not only against me, but against your God, which they respected the God of Israel. You'll see in a few minutes here. They respected the God of Israel, even though Zedekiah did. Said, this is the last thing you're going to live with is the sight of your children and your nobles and your friends dying, being executed. That's the last thing you'll ever see in your lifetime. And then he put his eyes out. And bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. I'll tell you the rest of the story. They take him up there captive. He's blind. He lives out the rest of his life as a captive in Babylon. He dies later on in years, and the Jews up there bury him. That was the rest of his life. That's what he had. Now, you know, when you rebel against God, you suffer the consequences. And some of them can be pretty drastic. The rest of that man's life, he lived with the last scene he ever saw on this earth, and that was his friends and his children being slaughtered. What a terrible thing to have to live with and then live a captive the rest of his life, you know. So when you rebel against God, the consequences can be long and hard and severe. Any questions? Just like this country today, Don, I'll talk about some of the things going on here in this country. Every week, I'm amazed at the acceleration of the things. Thank you, Ben. I'm amazed at the acceleration of the things that this country is doing against God. I mean, several years back, I wouldn't have believed some of these things that are happening right now. I just would have never believed. Not in this country, it couldn't happen, but it is. And it's accelerating faster and faster and faster. So, you know, God's not in the apologizing business. He'd have to apologize to Sodom, Gomorrah, some of these people here, if he did not judge this nation, and he's not in the apologetic business. So what does that tell you? 2013 is going to be an interesting year. Verse 8, the Chaldeans burned the king's house and the houses of the people with fire, break down the walls of Jerusalem. They went back in there, and they're just making absolute, total devastation of the city. Then Nebuzaradan, this is another guy, the captain of the guard. Now, he is Nebuchadnezzar's, he would be his general of the army. Of the guard carried away captive unto Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, people like Daniel, Ezekiel, those men were carried up there. Those that fell away or had surrendered, is what would be better translated, they survived. That fell to him and the rest of the people that remained. Now, this guy rounds up all the rest of the remnant that they want to take with them. They didn't take everybody. They took the people that had skills, arts, crafts, the more the nobility class, the educated class. This is the way Nebuchadnezzar did his kingdom and his empire. He would take the highly educated and skilled people when he captured a nation, and he would bring them to Babylon and put them to work for him. The rest of them, whatever he left, the manual laborers, the ignorant, the poor, the sick, the needy, he just left in the rubble of the cities. And this is what he did basically here at Jerusalem. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left of the poor, the people, which had nothing in the land of Judah, and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. He said, okay, you poor people here, here's all the rich people's lands, here's their vineyards, here's their gardens, their farms, whatever. You know, you're poor, you're no threat to us, So get out there and just get you some place and try to survive. That's what's left there. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, now, Nebuchadnezzar, the king himself, like I say, knows about Jeremiah. You've got to realize this has been going on for years with the Chaldeans. And Jeremiah has been telling this same story for 40 years. So Nebuchadnezzar knows everything that's going on around him, and he knows about Jeremiah. He also knows how Zedekiah treated him. So he tells his captain of the guard, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, I want you to take him, and I want you to look well to him, and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee. Nebuchadnezzar tells his top general, I want you to take Jeremiah, you take care of him. I don't want any harm to come to him. Know all about him. So you take him and you do with him as he wants to be done. Okay? So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, sent Nebuchadnezzar, Raspasarius, and I'm not going to try to pronounce that one. Those others. And all the king of Babylon's princes. He takes this group of people here, and they're all gathered there. They're surrounding up all the remnants of Jerusalem to divide up the spoils, send the remnant back. Then verse 14 says, even they sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the prison. Now, they go down to Jerusalem, and they get him out of this prison courtyard where Zedekiah and the Jews have been keeping Jeremiah. Nebuchadnezzar goes down there and gets him out of there, committed him into Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. He's a scribe, by the way, that he should carry him home, so he dwelt among the people. Nebuchadnezzar takes care of Jeremiah. He knows he's God's man. He knows he's a prophet. And he knows he's been trying to tell the people to don't rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. So he's taking care of him. Tells you, go on back down there and you live with the king's son, the scribe's son. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, now before they captured Jerusalem, God gave Jeremiah another message. He says, go and speak to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, now this is the guy that went to Zedekiah. He was the eunuch, probably in charge of his harem. He's the guy that went and got 30 men together, took some ropes, old rags and clothes, put down into the well, got Jeremiah out. Now here God seeks him out during all this destruction around him, and God tells Jeremiah, I said, I want you to go speak to him and sing. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring my words upon this city for evil. In other words, I'm going to destroy this city. It's already happening. For evil and not for good. And they shall be accomplished in that day before thee. What I've told you is going to happen. It's going to happen. But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord. And it's interesting. Here's a little old guy, probably one of the lowest people on the totem pole socially, anywhere in the palace. He's a eunuch. You know, they take his manhood away and he's in charge of the harem. But here's this guy, because he was faithful to God, took care of God's prophet. And God says, after all this war and the thousands that are dead and the cities in rubbles, I'm going to take care of him. He's not going to die. You know, this is an example. A lot of us today, and we look around and we say, okay, what's going to happen to America? What's going to happen if we have a revolution? What's going to happen if we get hit by the terrorists? And on and on. Well, what ifs? You can go through a lot of what ifs, and you can live your life every day in fear of the what ifs. That's ridiculous to do that. Here's the way I look at it. Whatever God's going to permit, He's going to permit. And I take every day, one day at a time, and I enjoy that day. Might be my last. But even if this whole country comes apart, I'm God's child, and He will protect me if He wants me protected. I don't care what happens. So that's the way I look at it. I don't lose any sleep overnight. Do I watch what's going on? Yes, I do. I want to know what's happening in this world. I think that's, you know, God gave us a brain. He wants us to use it. But I do not fret over it. I don't worry over it. I go about my daily activities. And then whatever is going to happen, God's going to permit it. If He gets me through a great, terrible upheaval, then fine. If He doesn't, I've got a better retirement plan, anything down here anyhow. So, this is the way I look at life. I don't let it bother me. I told y'all the story one time. Some of you may not have heard this, but I came by and I'd been somewhere, and we came home, and I turned the TV on, and she was fixing supper, and I was sitting there, and they had this newscast on that a big, great asteroid was getting ready to hit the Earth, and on and on and on. I don't watch a lot of movies and stuff. This was a movie, but I didn't know it. I mean, it was just like it was the real thing. There were in a newsroom and broadcast and all this. And Bonnie says, "What is this going on?" I said, "Well, honey, I don't know. It sounds like they got an asteroid. They say it's headed here toward the Earth and it's going to impact the Earth and going to kill about half the people on the Earth." And I said, I mean, it was so real. You know, I still didn't catch on. It was a movie. And she said, "Well, what are we going to do?" I said, "Well, I want you to go ahead and finish supper. We're going to eat." And she said, "But, honey, this is pretty serious." I said, "You know, I'm pretty seriously hungry, too." And I said, "If it's going to hit, you can't change where it's going to hit anyhow. So I want at least die on a full meal. So you go ahead and fix our supper." Well, she fixed supper. And still, this movie's going on. I still think it's a real thing. So in a few minutes, she sets her plates down there and we're eating, and then they broke for the advertisement. I thought, "Oh, that's just a movie." But anyway, I was going to enjoy my meal anyhow. I couldn't change where the thing was going to hit, so, you know, I fret over it. It's the way I look at it. Any questions or comments? I'm not crazy. That's just the way I look at life. My daughter's sitting back there. She can tell you. Okay, verse 17. "But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord, and thou shalt not be given into the hand of the men for whom thou art afraid." Listen, you don't worry about it. You took care of Jeremiah, my prophet. I love you. I appreciate what you've done. You know, I look at the United States of America today about Israel. I'm really concerned because I really do believe that a lot of what will happen to this nation in the future will be determined by how we treat Israel. I'm telling you, the warnings are over and over and over in this scripture. And anytime I see us not supporting Israel or helping Israel, it really makes me concerned that God has said up there, "I've warned you, I've warned you, I've told you, I've told you. You better listen." Okay? So when I see our government not supporting Israel, that gets me concerned. Okay? That the hammer's getting drawn back on us. Verse 18, "For I will surely deliver thee. Thou shalt not fall by the sword." You're not going to get killed. "But thy life shall be for a prey," or a prize, really, it should be translated. "For a prize unto thee." It's a prize. You're going to get to live. I mean, you could look around from where this man is right there, and there are thousands of dead laying everywhere. Just as Jeremiah said, so many they can't even bury it. They're just going to lay there and rot. And this man is seeing all of this, and Jeremiah's delivered a message. You're going to be okay. "Pray unto thee because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith the Lord." Because this man did this one deed by trusting God and helping his prophet Jeremiah, God has rewarded him with his life to escape this disastrous war that's coming and killed so many thousands of people. God's let him live and go on about his life because of the deed that he did. Anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, let's get into chapter 40. Because it kind of carries along a little bit there. I'm going to read verse 1 through 6. "The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord after Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, let him go from Ramah, where he had been taken and bound in chains among all those that were carried away captive to Jerusalem and Judah, which were carried away captive unto Babylon." Now, he was in the group that they first took up there for judgment. "The captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, The Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place." How about that? Here is the king's general, and he's telling Jeremiah, Jeremiah, look around all this destruction and death. And listen, y'all brought this on yourselves because your God told you. Now, isn't that amazing? Here's a Gentile general telling the Israelites, you know, he had respect for the Israelites' God. And he said, you're in this position because you disobeyed your God. Now the Lord hath brought it and hath done according as he has said, because you have sinned against the Lord, have not obeyed his voice. Therefore, this thing has come upon you. He's preaching the message back to Jeremiah and the rest of the people, because you didn't obey your God. Here's the situation that you're in. And now, behold, I loose thee this day from the chains which were upon thine hand. If it seem good unto thee to come to me unto Babylon, come, and I will look well unto thee. But if it seem ill unto thee to come with me to Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is before thee, whether it seemeth good and convenient for thee to go, thither go. I'm taking your chains off, Jeremiah. You're free to go. You can go with me to Babylon, have a good life. I'll take care of you the rest of your life, or you can stay here. Whatever you want to do, it's your choice. Nebuchadnezzar has said, you are a free man. Now, while he has not yet gone back, he said, go back unto Gedaliah, the son of Jehoiakim, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon hath made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people, or go wherever it seemeth convenient to thee to go. So the captain of the guard gave him victuals and food and a reward and let him go. Gave him some money, gave him some food, and he said, Jeremiah, take off. Where you want to go, where you want to live, who with, is your choice. You're a total free man. Then went Jeremiah unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people that were left in land. These were the poor people, the remnants that they didn't kill or take captive. Now, when all the captains of the forces which were in the fields, even they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, governor in the land, committed unto him men, women, children, the poor of the land, of them that were not carried away to Babylon. Now, this Gedaliah is the man who has been put in charge by Nebuchadnezzar. He said, you're here, you're over what's left, whatever comes in, or whoever's left here, you're in charge. Now, I'm going to just go through and finish up the rest of chapter 40 and tell you what happened. This guy here, Gedaliah, was a well-liked person. And so they had guerrilla units out in the mountains and in the hills and in the surrounding area that had escaped the Babylonian army. They all came in to be under his authority. And he said, look at verse 9. Here's what he tells the people. Fear not to serve the Chaldeans. Dwell in the land and serve the king of Babylon, and it shall be well with you. Listen, if you'll just listen to what Jeremiah said, submit to the king of Babylon. He's God's man to do this. If you'll submit to him, we can live here in peace, what's left of us. Now, I'll help you. I'll be your governor, and I'm going to submit to him. I'm here to serve him, and we all can have as peaceable a life as possible and try to pick up the pieces. But we cannot rebel against this man anymore. We've got to stop this stuff. As this goes on, all these people come back in to come under his rulership. But then something happens in verse 14. Take a look at that. Now, these people come in and they say unto him, dost thou certainly know that Belias, the king of the Ammonites, has sent Ishmael, the son of Nethiathan, Hiath, to slay thee? Now, we get into the palace intrigue. Okay, here's all these people come back to him. He's well-liked. He's doing a great job. He's submitted to Nebuchadnezzar. And things are becoming better for the people that are left behind. And then one of the guys that comes back said, listen, the king of Ammon wants to kill you. He doesn't like you, and he's got an assassin assigned to come kill you. And he said, if you'll let me, I'll go over there and I'll kill him before he kills you. So the king says up there, look at verse 16. But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, said unto Johanan, the son of Kareah, thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely of Ishmael. Now, the king listens, or the governor, he listens to what he has to say. He says, I don't believe you. I don't think the king of Ammon would kill me. He really has no reason. Yeah, the king of Ammon, well, what the king of Ammon thought he could do, since their army was destroyed and weak, now this man was a good, strong leader, and the people were forming up under him, and he thought that if I have a chance to go get into that territory and get possession of any of it, I better do it now and cut him off quick. Yeah, Ammon was later taken. Yeah, but he thought at the time, since they were weak and had just been destroyed, that he could move in there. But this guy was forming up and strengthening the people. And he said, if I'm going to do anything, I better do it now. I'll kill him. And this is exactly what happened. This governor, Gedaliah, did not listen to this man, and he does get assassinated. We'll get into that a little bit later. I'm going to stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Prayer. Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for our many blessings you grant us. I thank you for this offering here, Lord, that we have taken up to help those who are not as blessed as we are, to ease their burdens some, Lord. And we do it in your name and for your glory. In Jesus' name we ask these things. Amen. Y'all have a great week and call me if you need me.